Welcome to today's webinar compiled and produced by the team at biznews.com. All of our webinars are interactive. We encourage you to pose questions to our guests. The more challenging, the better. And the earlier you get the questions in, the better the chance of having them answered. The recording of this webinar will be available later today on the biznews.com channel on YouTube. Well, my humblest and sincere apologies for being a few minutes late today. What happened was we've got this fancy new Ethernet cable that I plugged in, and of course, it didn't work. Worked on Thursday. It worked when we tested, but it didn't work today. Nevertheless, we are here a few minutes late, so we'll give it a little bit longer for today's Rational Radio webinar. The way we are going to be handling it today, we kick off with David Shapiro and Adrian Saville, our two market commentators, to pick up on what's been happening in the past week. David and Adrian, that's your cue to switch on your webcam so that we can see you, please. There we go. David knows. I'm sure Adrian will join us in just a moment. And then after that, we have got Basil Skordos, who's the Group FD of NASPERS, standing by. I know he's with us because we've seen him on screen already, and he'll be taking us through some of the big issues of a company, Dave, that is, well, all important, all critical to South African shareholders.
In a big way, and has been for a long time. I mean, it's one of the major success stories of of the past few years and of the South African market. I mean, it's an incredible success story. Taken over, NASPERS today has taken over from the Anglo-Americans that we used to know during the mining booms. You know, to now, today, it's all about Prosus and NASPERS, and of course Tencent. So I think there are enormous number of questions that we have to ask, and that's why I think it's going to be a fascinating session. Because it's not only about what's happening now, it's what's likely to happen in the future. And this is a world player. So I think it's just going to be such a broad, such a broad conversation.
We are looking forward to it. But before we get into that, our general manager, Stuart Lohman, looks after this webinar, make sure that everything's working as it should. Stu, do you want to take us through the vital statistics?
Thanks, Alec, and welcome, David and Adrian. Just quickly, if you can see Alec, David, and Adrian on screen and hear my voice for the presentation, the little high-five option on your control panel, if you can give us a few high-fives, then at least I know everything's coming through loud and clear. There we go. Alec, we've got a couple of those coming through, which is always good to see. Alec, we also like to keep it quite conversational. As Alec said, there's little questions dropped on that same control panel. If you put your questions in there, Alec can pass them on as he goes through the discussion. But all good this side, Alec.
Brilliant. Adrian, from your perspective, I don't know if you're a NASPERS fan or not, but I guess all South Africans, given that it's 21% of the JSE All Share Index, NASPERS stroke process, have to be interested in what happens to this company and indeed its share price.
Yeah, indeed. If you are a passive investor or an active investor, the size, stature, growth, success of the business has to matter to your portfolio. And for active investors, if you're trying to beat a benchmark of which NASPERS and Prosus are massive components, you've got to have a very clear view, on whether you want these in or out. And if you are a passive investor where you just want to own the index, you have very healthy doses. I love David's reference to, this is today's Anglos, that, if we rewind 20, 30, 40 years, if you owned the JSE, you owned Anglos. Oh, it might have been the other way around, hey Dave. but you cannot possibly describe yourself as a South African investor without having a view and or exposure to these two global businesses, which and I think the word giant belongs in that description.
Oh, Adrian, I was hoping we would have some real clear audio from you today, but it seems as though the new mic, is it not working that well? We're getting a bit of feedback on our side. You got it there.
Yes. I didn't blame.
You must tell him to plug it in, though, Alec. You must tell him, you mustn't just hold it, you must plug it in.
Okay, next time round, we'll do that. Dave, last week, we had quite a big story on BizNews that we followed it through to its ultimate conclusion. The authorities came out with an announcement, including exchange-traded funds, in a releasing of exchange control, effectively. There was a backtracking, according to Magda Wizikcha and Magnus Haystack. This was due to big asset managers squeezing the Treasury and saying that we're not going to support you on the infrastructure fund, which is, again, a trade-off for prescribed assets. So I guess what goes on in smoky rooms is quite distressing to the rest of us. But that's their that's how they maintain it. Whatever happens, it's now been put on hold until the 15th of December. How are you reading all of this?
You know, there's a lot of conflicting issues. Let me try and explain it in a simple way. If we look at Glencore, it does very little business in South Africa. It's an overseas company, and yet it's regarded as a Rand investment. If we look at British American Tobacco, the same thing. Even if we look at Naspers, to an extent, Naspers owns, I mean, most of the economic value comes from Tencent. And yet it's regarded as a Rand investment. So if you extrapolate that and take it through, I think the desire was to bring more investments like that here that would be regarded as perhaps Rand investments and not take up your foreign allowance. Because if they take up your foreign allowance, then you're limited to 30%. So I think, so in my view, those are the conflicts. Now you've got to decide what's foreign and what's not foreign. I think the authorities are very mixed up over what to describe as foreign or not. If there's, you know, they might say, oh, well, Naspers has a tradition here. It's been here for a long time. It started off as Nationale Pers. To an extent, I'm trying to think which other companies had it as well. But overall, I think they've got to now finally decide what is Rand and what isn't. I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, I think we have to expand our offshore allowances. In other words, to allow pension funds, those regulated by Regulation 28, you know, to increase their exposure to a lot more businesses than they are at the moment. But it's terribly confusing and a lot of conflicts, and I'm not the right person to see through it. But what I do want to say is that I would like some concessions allowing Regulation 28 to expand a bit more, you know, to expand offshore a little bit more.
We forget the basis of exchange control came from Sharpeville in 1960. It's really a legacy of the apartheid system. But, of course, it protected the apartheid government from the bad policies that they were producing. And the ANC government has continued with it as well. Anyway, let's not get too deeply into that conversation, because I think that Adrian, being a professor and a doctor, will have his views on exchange control. And I hope they're not different to mine, Adrian. I hope you're not going to say exchange control is a good thing.
I'm scared to say anything with my microphone, Alec.
So you sound better now. I don't know what you did while you were off camera.
Okay. If it's bad, then tell me and I'll kick out, because there's nothing worse than bad audio. But hopefully this is solved. If you take exchange control, there are very few instances of exchange control having had the desired effect. Often it leads to rent-seeking industries, and you know, South Africa has had its own experience with that, with recall the financial rand and the commercial rand, which it builds an entirely new industry where you can actually make money by, you know, jockeying these two horses. I do sit with you in terms of this is a distinctly negative, not unambiguously negative, but distinctly negative policy, where we have to scratch really, really hard to find examples of policy success. There are one or two anecdotal cases, but they're exactly that. They're anecdotal. In David's observation about, you know, we need more, I think there's a yes and there is a no that I would add to that. Yes, we need more because the South African market has become it is not a fragmented and highly competed market where you've got lots of choices and optionality. In fact, you are fairly limited. So I think that that's one aspect, and also investing on the JSE doesn't necessarily even give you South Africa. That's part of our conversation today. The caution, the caveat is that remember that one of the primary reasons why we're investing is to look after our future selves in retirement. And if you are building a dollar-based portfolio, but you have rand-based liabilities in 20 or 30 years' time, you might be entirely mismatching your assets and liabilities just to always be alive to that very, very real risk.
Okay. Well, we've got our insights now from our two of our panelists, and we'll bring in today's guest. Basil Skordos is the Chief Financial Officer, Group FD of Prosus Naspers, a man that many of us are invested in, or certainly he looks after our investments, even though we might not be aware of it. There we go. Basil, you're on screen now. Fantastic. David and Adrian have got lots of questions to ask you as we go through this conversation today, but also, as mentioned at the outset, our BizNews community members, our BizNews premium members, do have the opportunity to pose their questions as well. But I think let's start off. David, do you want to come back on screen and we'll kick off with you? There are really three issues, I guess, that one needs to have a look at with Basil today. The first of these is the discount between the share price of Naspers/Prosus and Tencent. Can you just understand, just maybe unpack that a little bit for us? And I'm sure that would be one of your first questions there.
Yeah, sure. Look, Naspers has a stake in Prosus, which has the stake in Tencent. And the problem is that if you unpack that, and I'm going to ask a question now, if I may lead straight into it, Alec, what's happened is that, you know, if you look at the trading price of both of those, remember that Prosus now trades on Amsterdam, and of course it has a secondary listing in Johannesburg, and then we have Naspers, which has the listing here. You know, if you unpack the value of those, they're trading at a deep discount to the major investment, which is in Tencent. And so I want to ask Basil a question because it bothers me, and I must say, you know, as you would have gathered, we are big holders in Prosus and Naspers. Personally, I'm a big holder in Prosus, you know, under my own portfolio, etc. When I looked at the results, and I think this is the conundrum, when I looked at the results that came out recently, which were the interim results, if you look at Tencent, it is still providing 111% of operating profit. In other words, all the other subsidiaries, growth areas, classified, paid, food delivery, e-tail, etc., as well as mail.ru, actually contribute minus 11%. That gives you the 100%. Now, my worry is that Tencent is still a very strong growth company. It's still growing plus 30%, and for the next 5 years, we can see it growing at, you know, anywhere up to 25%, definitely in double digits. Even today, China came out with some very good manufacturing numbers and have highlighted that their target is around about 4.5% growth. That will give them, that will fit in with their plan. So if you've got Tencent, which makes up so much of Naspers and Process, still growing at those kind of levels, what's the challenge for the others? Can you ever prevent, you know, what's the policy to prevent Tencent completely overwhelming the valuations and, continuing just to would say, create the discount or, you know, be responsible for the discount? It just seems to be a massive challenge that Bob van Dijk and I would presume yourself, the executive, to actually grow those underlying business to prevent it from being overwhelmed.
Yeah. Quite a few things to unpack there, but let's start off with the main one and Tencent. A successful business that does incredibly well and leads the world and creates lots of value doesn't create discounts. It creates great returns. What creates discounts are a whole bunch of other things, including the fact that we are, as Alec mentioned, 21% of the all share index, 28% of the SWIX. And unfortunately, what that means is for South African investors, as we create more value, as our share price goes up, people need to sell down the share because they can't hold 28% of one company. So that creates a dynamic. That's not the only thing. There's a whole bunch of other things, and some of it was covered by David's introduction. Look, let's start off with Tencent and its position. So you're absolutely right, David. Tencent's doing phenomenally well. They grew their top line 28%. They grew the bottom line 32%. So margin. I think if you look at the world today, there's only one economy in the world today that's going to deliver positive growth, and it's China, right? Everything else is going to go down anything between -7% to -10%, some even worse. And I think that differentiation is going to continue for years to come, and particularly in the online space. So we remain very excited about China, very excited about Tencent's prospects, and very excited about being the largest shareholder there and the opportunity and the returns that that's going to deliver for our shareholders. And yes, because of structural reasons, the discount may go up in the near term, but we'll talk about, I'm sure we'll get to what we want to do about that, and we need to address that and make sure that we don't have too much value captured in the discount. Then you made some comments about the rest. Does it matter? Well, let's put some numbers behind that. Not my valuations, the valuation of the 18 or so sell-side analysts who cover us. They value the rest of the portfolio, excluding Mail.ru, excluding our investment in Trip.com, which is a travel aggregator in China, excluding those two. They value our e-commerce business at $30 billion. That matters. It matters in the South African context. That business is growing 51% year on year in the first half. And it's not a segment that's just being created, right? It's around now for 10 years. And we're seeing a meaningful acceleration of growth, an acceleration of 23%. So we grew 28%. Last year for the same period, we've grown 51% this year. Of those revenues, 60% of the revenues are now from profitable e-commerce businesses. And despite the fact that COVID impacted our classified business quite materially, those profits grew 20% year on year. If you rewind 3, 4, 5 years ago, less than 20% of the revenues from our e-commerce businesses were from profitable businesses. The reason we have losses in the rest is because we see great opportunities to build some fantastic businesses. And the largest driver of the e-commerce losses right now is our food delivery business. It in fact accounts for more than half of the investment through the income statement. And we've allocated a couple of billion dollars into that space, and it's worth multiples of that in a short period of time. Food delivery is going to be fundamentally transformed by technology. It's going to change how people eat. It's going to bring the benefits of scale and reducing costs and increased convenience and increased transparency. Know what you're eating, know what you're buying. So those losses are not because we can't do business, because we're uncovering new opportunities. The earlier stage businesses that we invested behind are big, they're growing faster than Tencent, and they're also profitable. But like we've done over the past 100 years, we're discovering a whole bunch of new opportunities that we're excited about and we think will deliver incremental.
Thanks, Basil. On the screen now, I pulled out your EBITDA, in other words, your operating profit, for the first 6 months of the financial year to the end of September. And it's quite clear there, Dave. As you can see there, classifieds made a small profit. Payments and fintech made, the profit was reduced in classifieds. Payments and fintech was still the same losses, but a big improvement on food delivery. E-tail went from losses to profits, and I don't know what the other is, and Shorty Baz will be able to explain that to us. But my big question on all of this is, look down, there's media, and I made a mention in my newsletter this morning that it seems to be out on a limb. It seems to be almost an afterthought now for this mighty Naspers group. You have already unbundled MultiChoice. Is the South African media asset on the block now that it's starting to lose annualized $400 million a year?
Yeah. A couple of things before we get to the media thing, because it's important that people understand that income statement. So on classifieds, the reduction is really because this was the business that was most impacted by COVID, right? It's a person-to-person trading opportunity. We need to meet. You need to give me the car keys. I need to give you the cash. And that model, of course, is heavily impacted by COVID, but we've done a lot of investment in innovation to actually now move that increasingly online and become increasingly transaction, and we're seeing a good recovery. The other thing about classifieds is there's an investment in that business to build out something different going forward in addition to what we do well now, and that is transactional business model. So get it from a person-to-person trade to a trade that happens through a platform, where there's escrow, the payment only gets released when the product gets to you, and covering everything from general goods to cars in that space. And in the payment business, again, the core payment business is profitable and the profits are growing. What you see there, the losses, what brings the aggregate of the payment business down is investment in our fintech ecosystem in India, where we're looking to build a credit business. Of course, that's now temporarily on pause. You don't want to be lending people money through a COVID pandemic, particularly when the government introduces debt moratoriums. So there's a bit of a carrying cost there. Now, to get to the question of media, Media 24, we could have actually included Media 24 with MultiChoice Group. We kept it in the portfolio because it is a fundamental different business to the one MultiChoice does. And because it's really not a business that you can actually go and sell to someone today. People aren't out there looking to buy media assets. And these type of businesses are not actually getting premium valuations at this point, primarily because we're seeing this massive transition from offline to online. And one needs to go through that journey. And I think the future of Media 24 lies in online. I think 24.com's viewership, even its subscriptions, because it's now got a South African subscription model, an English subscription model, an Afrikaans subscription model, and a couple of others. Those are growing rapidly. They're growing very quickly. They're also a shareholder in Superblist together with Takealot, a natural investment business, but growing very quickly. So yeah, they've had a tough time as a result of COVID, and they've had to absorb a lot, and they've had to reduce overhead and cut back costs. But I think the long-term future of our media segment and Media 24 and 24.com, it's a long journey. It's not going to be an easy journey. And the reason we've kept it in the group is because it can't stand on its own 2 feet right now, right? It, needs our support. We still believe in the long-term future of media. We think it's incredibly important to South Africa, to the broader country. And it's going to be online. And that part of the business, despite COVID, is growing well. Revenues are growing. It's actually getting to profitability too in the foreseeable future. But there's quite a bit of work still to do there. And I think it's a multi-year journey before you get that business back onto a sustainable basis and then growing again and bringing improved profits.
You don't have media assets in any other part of the portfolio?
That's correct. We don't. So our international focus was initially, that's where we started with the internet, right? We started in internet media assets. And in fact, that's how the Tencent investment came about, because it was in those days primarily, you know, an online media company, person-to-person communication with a portal and a website behind it. But post that, we're squarely focused on e-commerce, fundamentally because I think the media world has changed. It's no longer. There are a few markets that have very strong national players, but with the advent of Facebook, Google, and so forth, it's really become a global game. And secondly, while we like the space and it's hugely attractive, particularly in the online world and profitable, we've got to pick our shots. And when we look at the world of commerce and transactions and put it against media in terms of absolute size, commerce is just, it's 4 or 5 times bigger. So if you invest in the right assets and if you are a growth company, it does actually make sense to invest in the bigger opportunity that is also more nascent, right? Because India is also more developed online than commerce is. And that's why we've made this conscious decision to focus on e-commerce outside of and only hold on. The only media asset we hold on to now is Media 24 for the reasons that I've explained.
Thanks, Basil. We got lots of questions from our community already. But Adrian, your first turn to bat. So how would you like to – what would you like to pose to Basil?
Thanks, Alec. First of all, thanks for your time. It's great to be with you. The South African corporate landscape is littered with failed M&A, especially or in particular in putting this question to cross-border M&A, where many South African giants have ventured into other markets and come back beaten up, bruised, lots of battle scars. Your experience has been very different, and I would, what is it that distinguishes you in your culture, in your transacting? What is it that has helped you really distinguish yourself? And then, you know, in giving attention to your portfolio, you've got operations and investments. Multi-geography. I mean, you really are a global operation. Although you're known for China, you are in Russia, Poland, Brazil, Colombia. Where do you see, and if I could ask that we leave aside size, that we don't worry about the biggest market, but which of those markets excites you the most or intrigues you the most? Where do you see the best opportunity, and perhaps it would not be an investment question if I didn't say or add to that the biggest country risk.
Yeah. Great questions. Good to see you, and thank you for these. So, yeah, we made lots of mistakes before we became mildly successful in the M&A space. So you have to be willing to make mistakes, right? You have to be willing to learn, and you can't learn from some textbook or some sort of playbook and say, or take what you did in South Africa. It's okay, we're just going to go and carbon copy that and make that business in that country better, right? So I think the first step in going abroad, going overseas, is not to bet the bank. Is, okay, make some small investments, make, you know, see what you learn from it. start to develop a model, start to develop a thesis, and then go bigger. But you need to learn very quickly because, I mean, you know better than I how the capital flows are working out there, right? And how much increasingly capital is coming to these private opportunities, sort of pre-IPO and traditional IPO investors are actually backing these startup companies. So there's lots of demand for these things. But we've learned a lot of things over the years. The first thing is, if you're going to get into a new space, a new country, make sure that if it doesn't go well, that you can actually absorb that impact and still can build and do other things with the business. If you extend yourself too much, no matter how confident you are, you don't control everything, particularly in another country. So be ready for that. Once you've right-sized the investment, the other things we've learned is this idea of, well, we're going to take the great businesses we have in South Africa. We've got wonderful business in South Africa. In fact, we've got some of the best run companies, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And many of these companies are surviving some really, really tough conditions, but they're there and they're out there and they're still growing. Great businesses, great management, and doing well. But to go now and say, well, because I do well here, I can go do equally well there. And all I need to do is transport the best people I have in my South African team into that country and it's all going to be fine. That works in limited cases, right? And in limited industries where you're looking to break new ground, build for the future. So you're buying tomorrow's business, not yesterday's business. You've got to build it locally and you've got to build it with local people. And more importantly, in the world that we're in now. So 5 years ago, the world was, let's open up and let's be global and trade. Let's remove barriers, right? That's all changing now, right? We're going, for various reasons, we're going a lot more inward looking. And therefore, it's increasingly important that the company that's there is seen as a local champion. It's seen as someone that's doing something for the country and is developing a product for the country. So our businesses are not uniform. Although they're in the similar segment, similar space, local execution is key. So that's the other thing we do. You've got to make a conscious choice when you go overseas. Do you want to go for a business model that's global and therefore take on the titans, whether it's the American companies or the Chinese companies or some of the European companies? And we've decided not to do that. Or do you want to go for businesses that are very strong local businesses where you can build local moats? And we've preferred to focus there. And to do that, you've actually got to also set up the right operating model. So Bob, myself, the board, we don't sit and run our 84 countries that we're in and our similar number of businesses via remote control. So we don't sit in this big room with all these dashboards and make the decisions. We empower entrepreneurs. We empower local people who have built these businesses, scrappy guys, right, who've just built it with nothing, mortgaging their houses, mortgaging the garages, getting to something meaningful, who really want to change people's lives, really have a vision about things. And those are the sort of people we back, and we let them get on with it. We don't sit and tell them every week, every month, well, this is what you got to do. You got to go left, go right. No, you got to do this. We don't do that. What we do is we spend time with them understanding what the challenges are. Sometimes in the early years, it's just, how do I scale? You know, I've got to do all this financial stuff now. I've got to do all this legal compliance stuff. I've got to do all this tax stuff. And then I've got to also do the product and tech. How we can take care of all of that. We've done that for 100 years. We've done it well. Leave that with us. You focus on the product, focus on the consumer. We'll set that up initially. And then when you're ready and you become big and you want to be listed, it's your takeover again. Then the other thing is geographic diversity is beautiful for us because for many reasons. One, I mean, you know better than I that having a diverse portfolio can mitigate risk. But more importantly, it creates opportunities for learning. So we have a food delivery business in Brazil, one in Russia, Tencent's the biggest investor of the largest one in China. And then you bring these people together and you give them a sense of belonging, all part of the same group, right? No one wants to go anyone else's in that particular country. And then the openness starts, and then the sharing starts, and then the learning starts. And that's differential. You can't replace that, right? Just getting five entrepreneurs who are building some of the fantastic businesses in their markets together and talking about local differences, local nuances, helping each other succeed. So those are some of the things that work for us, right? So initially, yes, you've got to take risks. Sometimes you've got to take big risks, but make sure that if it goes wrong, you can survive it and your long-term strategy remains intact. I think sometimes people go too far believing too much in themselves. Second, know who your competitors are going to be, not today, but in 5, in 10 years. And then understand how you differentiate yourself, because everyone has capital. Everyone has an idea. But what's the unique source? What allows you to build better businesses than someone else? And related to that, I think pick where you want to focus, right? Prioritize your capital correctly. Pick where you want to focus. And then try and build around that, then do too many things.
Basil, I think David did mention that he wanted to talk a little more about the discounts. We've got a number of questions here. And just to remind you that I only use your first name to make sure that we don't embarrass you if you want to ask a tough question. Here's one from Pitt, which is a tough question for you. I'll read it. He says, looking at the segmental review, it's clear that Naspers is an investment company in which Tencent makes up more than the total economic interest. Naspers management has the benefit of Koos Bekker's genius. I can't but help question the remuneration policy of Naspers. Isn't Naspers performing because of Tencent and in spite of current management? I'm sure this isn't the first time you've heard this criticism, Basil. How do you answer it?
A couple of things. First of all, we always appreciate feedback from our shareholders, and the board and the Remco and everyone else takes that on board, and the remuneration policy continues to evolve. I'm the CFO, not the Remco chair, not the head of people. And in my 25 years with the group, I've never asked for a salary, never. I take what they give me and I carry on doing my job because I love what we do, and I haven't had the same day in the last 25 years. But to the point of, well, we're just benefiting from Koos's work and just sort of riding along, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, Bob and I have been in the hot seat now for 6 years. Our capital allocated into e-commerce, which is what we've essentially driven and built, was about, in total, about $11, $12 billion. The value, not my value, the value that the analysts put on the portfolio is north of $30 billion. The implied IRRs, including the failures, is 20%. Not over 1 year, not over two, not over three, but over six. Then the relationship with Tencent is not we just sit there and watch how it all goes. We spend lots of time with them learning, understanding, seeing how we can bring a lot of the good things they do into our business. So we've learned engineering scale from them. We've learned a lot of things from them. And similarly, sharing our ideas and experience of what we see around the world so that they can bring that into their business. And I think that relationship makes both businesses much stronger. And it's hard to put a value on that, either for them or for us. But I think it's sizable, incredibly sizable. So that's not just something that happens overnight, right? And then someone's got to make the choices that we make. If you look at the actual remuneration, if you unpack it a little bit, the bulk of our remuneration now comes out of building out the e-commerce business. And then the second highest component of our remuneration today is what we call performance share units. And essentially the way this works is we've got to outperform, and this is excluding Tencent, right? The performance hurdle is excluding Tencent. We look at the performance of the e-commerce portfolio relative to its global peers. And for those options to vest for us, our performance has got to, at least, it's got to hit certain thresholds. And of course, the better the performance, the more options at vest. So really, the remuneration policy now is not aligned at rewarding us for Tencent. It's focused on building out the e-commerce business, and it drives that focus by having options around the actual e-commerce business on its own, and then these performance share units, which are obviously shares in the combined entity, but the performance criteria is driven by how much the value of our e-commerce business grows relative to the broader market.
David, I do have a lot of questions from the community, but I think it's your turn next. Do you want to revisit that discount story? Because if you do, I've got a nice graph here.
We can come on to that. I don't know if you want to do that, but my question is more about with Tencent being so much of the economic value of Prosus and Naspers, there are risks. And, you know, we learned that the Chinese authorities sometimes can clamp down. We saw it with Ant and Alibaba, where they did exercise their, or put Jack Ma in his place. I don't know when Ant will ever be, or if it will ever be listed again, or listed. I'm sure there's a lot of work to be done. We've also had issues like the WeChat problems in America, although I think the market seems to bypass them. The big question is about China. You know, China is not the kind of area, or the authorities are not the kind of people who will be messed around by the billionaires, by the growing, the growing commerce population, or the growing entrepreneurs. How do you read China? And how do you manage that relationship? You know, in other words, what kind of a risk are they to Tencent getting a little too big for their boots? You know, to put it in the just common parlance, not saying that you are, but I mean, what's the risk of them clamping down on you?
And just to, before you answer that, for way of background, sure, for those who haven't been following the story, the biggest IPO in history in the world was Ant Financial, a subsidiary of Alibaba, which is very many ways like Tencent. And that was pulled 2 days before it was supposed to happen by the authorities, who have made no bones about the fact that they felt, as David says, they did not like what the CEO of Alibaba, Jack Ma, had to say about the bureaucracy in the run-up to what should have been a spectacular listing. So there's a lot of issues here, and clearly what's happening in Hong Kong at the moment, Basil, with it being strong-armed by the Chinese authority, would also be raising a few flags. You must be talking to institutional investors on this very often.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, regulation tends to lag new industries. It's been like that since the beginning of time, because regulators have to get up to speed, understand exactly what's going on in the business, exactly understand how this technology works, what's the broader impact, and then they have to step in and regulate. And we've seen regulation change, not just in China, but across the world. I mean, we talk about China, we talk about Alibaba, we talk about Jack Ma, but look at what's happening in the US. The Google CEO, the Facebook CEO, Amazon, and so the story goes. So I think any company, any big company that believes it can continue as it does without any incremental regulation, I think is fooling itself. Regulation's required. There's no way a company can regulate itself for the broader social good, right? There needs an element of regulation. But of course, regulation shouldn't stifle growth, innovation, investment, jobs. So that's the balance that that the politicians need to strike. And in the case of China, there's two key pieces that have come to the fore. The one is, of course, like every other country, China's saying, look, we want to, they've tightened up antitrust regulation, and they've said that they want to make sure that the companies that are buying other companies or companies that are consolidating spaces are reviewed and held to a particular standard, and that standard needs to evolve because of where the market is at, because of who the players are. The other thing they want to push is openness, so they don't want these platforms to be closed where they only benefit themselves and not the broader ecosystem. So that's one aspect of the regulation. And the other aspect relates to the fintech businesses, and we'll get to that one later. On the former, look, I think there's no doubt regulation is going to have some impact, not only on but on every Chinese, every large Chinese business, whether it's ByteDance, Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu. Everyone's going to have an impact. The same way regulation has an impact on Google, on Amazon, on Tencent. But look, this is where we were also many, many years ago. I think most of us will remember it, maybe not all our listeners and viewers. But remember the days of this is the end of Microsoft. Now they need to unbundle Internet Explorer, and they can't do this with Windows, and they can't do that. And yes, initially it was a cost to Microsoft. What it did is it actually made Microsoft a better company. They continued their spirit of innovation. They continued their spirit of creation. They understood how they needed to do that in the context of the new regulatory regime. And I think companies that take that approach will continue to do well. Companies that want to fight it and who believe, well, no, we don't need anything. Just let us carry on. We can do it all ourselves. I think if you resist and you live in a world where nothing should change, then you're going to have a problem. Now, if you look at Tencent's platform, Tencent's a very open platform. It's like Facebook, Google. It actually only grows the more and more companies that come into it, right? So Tencent isn't about keeping everything closed, everything to itself. It wants to bring more companies into the platform, more opportunities. Secondly, Tencent doesn't want to go and buy 100% of a company. What it wants to do, like us, it goes and looks at companies that are building products, new things, and that might be really good long term. And it gives them capital. It gives them strategic support. It gives them executional support, and it lands up a 15, 20, 25% investor. It's unlike a e-tail business, like Alibaba's, for example, where integration and just controlling the entire chain from start to end is so critical to the overall customer experience. So there you've got to acquire 100% of the company. You've got to integrate it into everything else you do so that the experience just slick across the board. So there's challenges there. But nonetheless, I think Alibaba will continue to do well. China, like every other country, wants big players. They want players who can stand up in the global arena and make their contribution. But like every other country, it can't let them carry on unfettered and unregulated. If we look at the Alibaba situation and the Alipay situation and the financial situation, look, I think at the core, and go, as you said at a conference, the Chinese don't pull together regulation in the span of 4 hours and then put it out there to sort of kill an IPO. It's not how they operate. They're very thoughtful, very considered about how they draft regulation, how they put it together around the internet space and so forth. So I think this regulation that's come to the fore has been something that's been in the works for a period of time. And the regulation's pretty straightforward. This is what they say. They say, listen, today you're a significant player in the Chinese financial ecosystem. But only 2% of your balance sheet is at risk. The remaining 98% is actually cash that comes from the traditional sector. It's the big banks, ICBC, Bank of China, China Construction, China Agricultural, all those big banks. And at the end of the day, they trust you to do all the right things, manage the risks, manage the compliance and so forth. But ultimately, you don't need as much as they do. So that's what they want to address. And they say, we feel you should have at least 30% of the skin in the game. And that's not unusual. It's not unusual. It's not a China-specific thing. In fact, most markets have similar type regulation. So I think at the core, yes, the world's changed. There's a lot to be said about the politics, about who's in charge and what they're doing. But at the core, no country wants to go and stifle growth of its companies. No company wants to kill multi-billion dollar IPOs. But they want to address systemic risks, right? And the Chinese do it in their way, and some countries do it in the other way, and some countries don't even do it at all. So, indeed, the world's changing, China's changing, regulation's going up, and you need to be prepared for it. And the way you deal with it is you make your submissions, you participate in the public forums, you express your views, you try to get people to a balanced outcome. And then once the regulation's passed, focus on complying. Focus on making sure that you can comply and then build the future around what those regulations are. You can still build the future. There's nothing that stops you. They just want you to do certain things that are aimed at mitigating the potential societal or financial or other systemic risk you might cause to the country.
That's classic entrepreneurship 101. You work within the boundaries that you're given, not necessarily trying to rail against the boundaries that have been put there, and I guess more than ever in China. Zane, I'm sure that answers your question as well. Basil, we are already getting close to the end, and I really don't want to miss out on the big issue that many South African investors have. So with your permission, Adrian, I'd like to put this graph up here, which shows the discount widening between Naspers, which is the orange line, and Tencent, which is the blue line. And it's never been as big as it is right now between the two companies. What are you guys going to do about it? Because just for the uninitiated, if Naspers were able to reduce that discount to what it used to be, you're talking about a substantial increase in the share price, which of course would add great value to all of South Africans, given that you're 21% of the JSE.
Indeed, Alec, that represents a great opportunity for value unlock, and we see it and we understand it, and our shareholders want us to do something about it, and we agree with them, and we're hard at work thinking through what we can do and how we do it. Look, conglomerate companies always trade at a discount, right? And they vary from 20 to 30, and in fact, over the past year, because of the impacts in the markets, broadly conglomerate discounts have gone up. But a discount to, so at the Naspers level, the discount to NAV is 52%, and that can't be explained by general market conditions. And there's a couple of things that drive it. One thing is, of course, our size and it's for selling. The other is, yeah, we are SA list, then it's significant FDA outflow, and as the biggest company, we bear the brunt of that, and so forth. But again, we can't control those things, right? It is what it is. We can't go now and bring another 50 companies of equivalent size to bring down our weighting. So what we've got to do is figure out and understand the circumstances, understand the conditions, and figure out a way to continue to bring that number down. Whatever we do, we've got to be clear and do it in such a way that it doesn't impact the long-term position of the group and the long-term strategy and the opportunity for us to continue to deliver the excellent returns we have to our South African and global investors. And it's a complex problem. There's tax considerations, there's other regulatory considerations, there's shareholder considerations. And Bob and I and the team have been hard at work now. And the one thing, and the thing we've done this year, and we started very early, the minute We saw COVID come and we saw the impact that it had on South Africa and the impact it was having on online business like ours. We saw that that disconnect was going to accelerate quite meaningfully. And you can see that very clearly in your graph, right? So we saw that the problem was going to get quite big. Well, it was already big. It was going to get much bigger in a relatively short period of time. So we really started our work many months ago. And our approach here is not to exclude anything. We're looking at everything. You know, we've looked at 20 plus ideas and not just at a desktop research level. We've looked at it substantially. We've taken every idea, even though initially we said, no, those can't work. And we've unpacked them. And I said, well, yeah, they can't work because of X, Y, Z. Can we solve those things? And as a result, we've built up significant IP. There's a couple of things that we need to think through. And ultimately, we'd like to come back with something that brings that discount down. But it's not going to be one thing. Clearly, it's going to have to be a whole bunch of things. The most important thing is that we continue to remain disciplined around capital allocation, continue to invest at a good return, build these fast-growing and profitable businesses, and continue to build on our strategy, while also taking sensible moves where we can to not to address some of the structural issues that are there, or find other ways of dealing with it. And the good thing about this, while it is a big value opportunity, the good thing is there are many ideas, right? And I think we'll figure out stuff. It's not going to be one silver bullet. It'll have to be an ongoing journey, right? And we'll have to try things as we go along. But most importantly, the most important thing we can do is continue to grow the business and deliver good profits and cash flows. So I can't say much more than that now because we haven't settled on what we could do, and the board needs to discuss it and debate it first. And then, of course, if some of these ideas resonate with the board and they're supportive, we'll come back and tell our shareholders and engage them on it and get the views and perspectives as we move forward. But this is important to everyone, and we're working very hard at it, and we recognize the opportunity to create incremental value beyond what we do with our core portfolio.
So the key answer there, and Len asked the same question as well, is that you are fully aware of what the issue is. This isn't a graph that you've never seen before. You are investing $5 billion in a share buyback, which will certainly underpin the current level of shares. But it's a package that you're working on, and watch this space as far as we're concerned. Adrian, your last question, I'm afraid. We've got to that point in the conversation already.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. So if we could go back to the question that Basil sort of alluded to but skipped over. You've got Avito, Russia, you've got OLX Poland, you've got iFood Brazil. Can I ask you to give me back a tweet? Which country you think is the standout country?
Yeah. Sorry, Adrian, I did that. You're absolutely right. I forgot to answer that question. I wasn't trying to duck it either. look, I think it really depends on the business and the business model, right? So it's going to vary but in our business, in the things in our model where we try to identify early trends, local modes, you know, some of the things we spoke about earlier, you've got to look at India. And it's not just about its size, right? Yes, it is a big market, but it's about its growth. It'll recover from COVID, it will grow very quickly, but also about its models. And I think we're seeing a lot more models that are very local to the Indian market. Indian trade, Indian commerce, it's very unique. And I think there's great engineering talent in India. There's great entrepreneurs in India. So the broader and there's good regulatory support. So they're trying to move payments online so that they can track things better, right, and tax things better. They're building payment infrastructure. Not only are they creating regulation, but they're building the infrastructure centrally at the government level to support those type of initiatives, right? They're creating a vibrant ecosystem for capital to come in for new ideas, new opportunities, and to build the local companies. They want to build these local champions, right? So that's a market that we're very excited about. We've been in it for a very long time, already made some good investments and realized great value with our Flipkart investment, which had an IRR of close to 30%. So, and a lot more. We've allocated quite a bit of capital over the last year, and I think we'll allocate a lot more going forward.
Basil, the last question from our community is from Gary, and he says, if you think the non-Tencent business is worth $30 billion, why don't you spin it off separately and realize shareholder value for these loss-making entities?
Certainly, we've listed companies. Tencent wasn't listed when we got into it. Malru wasn't listed. Delivery Hero wasn't listed. And we'll list others. So, yes, that is one way to create value. There comes real cost with being listed. It takes time. It takes effort. It distracts management. You also don't want to leave too much value on the table. So I think you've got to pick the right time and the right reasons. So we'll list many more businesses. And absolutely, I think Lenny's right. It's a good way to reflect value. But it has to be more than that, and the business needs to be ready for it, and the management team needs to be ready for it. So in time, that's certainly one of the things we can do, and it's one that we will look at seriously.
Basil, before we let you go, do you lose sleep at night thinking that you have 21% of South African savings sitting on your shoulders, that responsibility?
It's something that we take seriously. It's something that we understand the importance of, and indeed, it is a big responsibility. But it's not a burden, because I think we've got the right governance structure, we've got the right approach, we've got a diversified portfolio. We're in the right businesses, in the right markets, in the right segments. And our approach and strategy is tried and tested. So I feel confident about our ability to continue to make a positive contribution to our shareholders and our investees. And that's why I exist. That's why Bob exists. That's why everyone in this company exists. We ultimately to value for our shareholders and to do it in a sustainable way, not over 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, but over 20, 30, 40, as we've done so far. And that comes with a lot of hard work, and not just about taking risk. It's about having the right sustainability and governance structures around that as well.
Basil Skordos, thank you so much for joining us today. We've covered a lot of ground. David Shapiro and Adrian Saville, if you can just come back quickly, if you don't mind, to perhaps sum up there. We do have NASPAS as a major holding in our portfolio, in our BizNews portfolio. It's done very well. I was looking at, before we came on air, 38% in the past year, and you just can't sell it at these huge discounts. But from what you heard from Basil, are you guys, if you do have, as I presume you do, I think you said so, David, a big NASPAS shareholding, are you happy that it's in good hands, and you might even think of adding more, given that they want to close that discount at 52%, my goodness. You know, you're going off and buying yourself a burger for half price on this one. David? You're muted, Dave.
Sorry.
There we go.
I've been a great supporter of NASPAS and certainly, you know, even processed. I think I want to bring it back to the first question you asked me, you know, which was about the regulations that the Reserve Bank brought in. And when you listen to Basil, when you talk to Basil, you listen to the questions that Adrian's asked and so on, you have to sympathize with investors in South Africa, you know, and saying, hold on, there's a much bigger picture out there. You've got to open up. I understand matching assets and liabilities, you know, but to an extent, this lies with the investment managers themselves, you know, knowing what the liabilities are and where they can have growth. And, you know, as Adrian said as well, the JSC is becoming so restrictive. It's becoming so small that you can't close out those kind of opportunities to us. You know, when Basil tells you about the classified businesses, the food delivery and so on.
India.
So, what about India? Yeah, we don't know a thing about India.
It's their favorite destination. Wow.
It's so fragmented. It's so difficult to understand. But somewhere along the line, people are going to make money. But anyway, fascinating conversation. And once more, well done, Alec, you know, for bringing Basil to the viewers and to listeners. Thank you.
You're happy to have the nice person in your portfolio, or would you even be adding?
Of course I'm adding. I love Tencent.
Adrian, last word on your side.
Long process, even longer NASPAS. If you've got these types of discounts, this diversification, I understand all of the issues around that deep discounts and questions around remuneration and why should we really be paying for this? You've got to park all of those to the side and recognize that what you are buying here is a world-class business for 50 cents in the rand. And I'm a buyer.
Adrian Saville, well put. That's exactly what it is. So to actually sell NASPAS out of your portfolio, you're really taking a view that discount, that margin of safety, as Benjamin Graham put it famously, what's it, nearly 100 years ago, is something that is not big enough for you. Well, if it isn't big enough at 52%, goodness me, what are you looking for? Thanks, gents. It's been another wonderful Rational Radio webinar. Look forward to chatting with you again in the near future. Adrian and David, now that you're back from your holidays and your travels in the Kruger Park, we'll be back next week. Till the next time, cheerio. Thank you for joining us for this webinar, which is compiled and produced by the team at biznews.com. A recording of this webinar will be available later today on the biznews.com channel on YouTube. From our team, until the next time, cheerio. Okay.